Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Smart Mouth. I am your host, Catherine Spires. I have an announcement that I'm kind of excited about. I sort of whimsically decided to run a cookie contest, and you can find the details at smartmouthpodcast.com. And what I want everyone to do is send me their cookie recipes so that I can have them, basically. But there are going to be prizes too. I have three prize packages to send out to the three best, in my opinion, cookie recipes. So you don't have to send actual cookies, just the recipes and the little sign-up sheet and more details. Those are at smartmouthpodcast.com. And it's not just my opinion. I have two co-judges, Josh Scherer and Danielle Salmon, who have both been on the show before. So it's a little group effort. So go check that out. You could win some cookbooks and gift cards. So today, we're not talking about cookies. We're talking about salads, which is largely, but not exclusively, about lettuces and greens. If anyone wants to have more information about how it came to be that we eat such a wide variety of greens at this moment of time, you might want to check out an earlier episode of Smart Mouth from January 30th, 2018. Our guest was Andrea Crawford, and she was one of the people responsible for getting a wide variety of vegetables in your face. So there's some background on that in that episode. Funnily enough, as we were recording this with my guest this week, film critic April Wolf, the CDC sent out a warning that all romaine lettuce was very bad for you at this particular moment in time. An E. coli outbreak in the very product of which we are speaking. So, I don't know. Don't get the urge to eat a romaine salad after listening to this. Arugula should be fine, though. So, yeah, our guest is April Wolf. She worked with me at LA Weekly. We both got fired probably within 20 minutes of each other through no doing of our own. Her podcasts are Switchblade Sisters and Who Shot Ya? And you should go check those out. And in the meantime, listen to this episode, find out about Jell-O salads and what the deal is with that, and tell a friend about this podcast, Smart Mouth. Thanks, everybody. This week, April Wolf. Hi, April.
Hi, Catherine.
I'm so glad that we're finally podcasting together.
I know.
We have cousin shows.
We have cousin shows.
Yeah, for sure. So April and I worked together at LA Weekly briefly. We kind of worked there for the same amount of time and were fired together. So
yeah,
we're sisters in arms.
just enough taste to feel like there could be a good life ahead and just to have it swiped away.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. But April still works as a film critic. Mm-hmm. And then she also has her podcast, too.
Yeah.
On the Max Fun Network.
Yeah. Switchblade Sisters and Who Shot Ya? Movie shit.
Yeah. And tell everyone a little bit about the concept behind each.
Switchblade Sisters is that's just one that I host and that I created in... It's essentially me having a new female filmmaker on every week, and then I ask them to pick their favorite genre film, so it's like action or horror or sci-fi or any of those movies, and they talk with me in depth about this movie, the production of it, the craft of it, and everything, and through that, we get a better idea of how this filmmaker approaches her own work, too. So,
yeah. I like it because it's talking about movies in a way that hasn't really been done so much. It's a little bit of a different view than what the consumer normally gets.
Yeah. I think you can always have like a gaggle of guys together laughing and cracking jokes about movies. But this, for me, because I'm a filmmaker myself, is a chance to get into the nitty gritty of how a movie is made and maybe get people to just appreciate the artistry of something. Maybe even if you didn't like something, you can appreciate what went into it and the ideas behind it.
Yeah, that's such a cool way of coming at it. Do you appreciate the artistry of salads?
A good salad, it turns out, is actually very difficult.
Is it really?
I mean, it's not, but it is.
Well, tell me more.
Okay. So many people try to overdo it with salads, first off.
Okay.
And they don't know what the fuck they're doing. And I just think that there's a very easy, simple way to make a salad that people just go in the opposite direction so often. And I'm so tired of creamy ranch as well.
Okay. The number one selling salad dressing in America.
Yeah. As a Midwesterner, Hidden Valley Ranch is... I think I've probably had buckets of it in my lifetime. Mm-hmm. And I am definitely a lemon dill, olive oil fan. That's my jam.
Okay. And how do you feel about fruit in green salads?
Okay. Well, fuck them.
Oh.
Cause I think that the biggest offense to food and to salads in general was the proliferation of craisins that came in the late 90s, early 2000s.
This is so specific. I love it. Yes. Okay.
I mean, I think about this pretty constantly because I had just kind of started getting into salads. Like I didn't have a very sophisticated palate. Not that I'm saying that I have one right now, but growing up in the Midwest, most of your food is canned.
Mm-hmm.
Cause you have to make it through the winter. There's just nothing fresh.
Right.
Most places in like Michigan where I'm from, like they don't quite know how to grow specifically for a season and people don't know how to eat for a season. So, you know, things just don't taste that great, vegetables specifically. So you don't know, you know, I didn't have spinach until I was in my mid-20s mm-hmm. and I was like, oh wow, spinach is really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't want to like hate on a region that I don't know much about, but this is... Every person I know from the Midwest has relayed an anecdote along those lines.
Yeah, it's hard. I think that they're definitely getting back into kind of seasonal growing, but it just came with like Americans like in the 1960s on just wanting everything all the time, even though like, no, you shouldn't have a strawberry in January.
Yes, yes.
And so, yeah, salads were fucking terrible mm-hmm. in Michigan. Just the worst. Just like I didn't realize that there was lettuce that wasn't iceberg. No idea that there was lettuce that wasn't iceberg because I thought that lettuce at that time was just like a vehicle for ranch. Like I didn't know that it was a thing. And so then all of a sudden, you know, people start getting into like fancy, healthier stuff like late 90s, early 2000s. And Midwesterners really over embraced the craisins. I think the last time that I went home, you know, a lot of restaurants, you know, I used to be one of these like teenage restaurant workers too. They'll give you extra of everything in your food uh-huh. because they're like, oh, we're hooking you up.
And right. I'm
like, I don't need
a pound of craisins.
Yeah, exactly. Like a whole smashed cup, like an entire one cup mm-hmm. of craisins. In a small salad. Like,
thank you so much for your kindness, but no.
Yeah, yeah. And I remember when I was working, because I managed the kitchen line of a Steak and Shake for, I worked there for like 9 years, but I used to, because I didn't eat hamburgers, but I would always put like, oh, here's extra mayonnaise and ketchup and mustard. So I would load it up because I was just like, I know you guys love it.
Right.
And then like the first time I actually like had a burger, like after I had like left that place, and I was just like, oh, that was terrible. I'm so sorry. I thought I was doing something good for you. Like you're gonna be like, oh, thank God she gave me all that extra mayonnaise. And in reality, they're like, what the fuck?
Well, maybe this is part of why you believe, it seems like you believe in more of a pared back salad. Maybe it's sort of a reaction.
I do believe in that. And yet at the same time, like I'm a fucking sucker for a niçoise.
Oh.
Like if I see a niçoise in any menu, I will try it just to see
okay.
what it is. Cause I think, you know, obviously like the more classic versions are the ones that I tend to like. Mm-hmm. I think the best niçoise in the city is actually at, what's the Masa in Echo Park?
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's interesting. So that's more of a composed salad. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of a fancy lady salad.
Yeah.
And there's not a creamy dressing.
No. I mean, it's there's a pesto-based dressing. And so there it's like there's a creamy texture to it, but they don't put on much of the dressing. Mm-hmm. Like it's like very clearly tossed beforehand. In the dressing with like just a light glaze over everything, which is, it's just perfect.
They know
exactly how much to put on. And I like it. I like it when that happens at a restaurant and they don't like just throw it to you and like, here, whatever, right, here's right. a cup, you know?
So I was reading about dressings mm-hmm. in preparation for talking about salads.
Okay.
And there's a lot around the turn of the last century and into, I think, the 20s and 30s about, you know, in French cooking, there's the five mother sauces, and mm-hmm. some of them are white sauces. Mm-hmm. And in America, they would take the fancy French names of those white sauces, but it would really just be sugar and flour and a liquid.
Yeah.
And then they'd call it a fancy sauce.
Yeah.
And the way it was described is, whereas in European cooking, it's meant to accentuate other flavors, in American cooking, it is meant to blanket.
Yes. Yeah. No, that's good. And it's one of the things where I've had mayonnaise before, but I love mayonnaise, but it would be a dream to like go to Europe and have mayonnaise in France.
You know? Right. And that actually tastes like something.
Yeah. You know, like, what is the difference? And that's also probably one of the reasons why I like veganaise or veganaise, however you decide that you want to pronounce it, because it has a cleaner, more interesting flavor.
Ah, and
it's not just like fat. There's a flavor to it. It feels almost like a dressing in a, you know.
Oh, I didn't know that. Okay. I think the biggest cooking failure I've personally ever had was trying to make homemade mayonnaise.
It's real fucking hard.
Right?
It is real fucking hard.
I was shocked. I had to throw it away and I felt awful because that's a real waste of food because you have to have so much oil at the ready for it.
Yeah.
And apparently you really have to drip it in very slowly.
Mm-hmm.
It's the slowest process in the world, and I had no idea and wasn't emotionally prepared.
Exactly. But like that, knowing that, I know absolutely that I've never had real mayonnaise, you know? Like it's just never happened.
Just always from a jar in the grocery store.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have to imagine, but all but the fanciest restaurants are buying store-bought mayonnaise because, again, it takes forever.
Yeah.
Who has the time?
I always wonder, I mean, like, I've had, like, one or two very drunk, very expensive meals in Las Vegas, and I always wonder if maybe at some point in time I had real mayonnaise then. I don't know.
That's such a funny life mystery. There's a podcast miniseries for you. Have I ever had real mayonnaise?
It's true.
It's an exploration of American cuisine.
Yeah. Don't get me started on the Miracle Whip difference, too. I mean, like, deviled eggs, for instance, you can have Miracle Whip, but nothing else.
So I don't know if this is a regional thing. I don't know about the different kinds of mayonnaises, but when I talk to people who aren't originally from the West Coast, like I am, the opinions are strong.
Oh, my God.
And deeply held.
Yeah. I mean, like, sure, they look alike, but the taste is extremely different.
Hmm.
Yeah, Miracle Whip is a very different beast. But it's specifically, I think, good for deviled eggs.
Oh, that's a good little tip.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So there's different definitions of salad. But let's start with the one that, from my point of view, again, West Coast, mm-hmm. Cold vegetables.
Yeah.
Leaf-based. Yeah. And raw, which means not pickled. And so within those parameters, I think it can safely be described as something from that its invention goes from North Africa to North Europe, mm-hmm. essentially, because the first references are in like the Greek and Roman empires to basically raw vegetables that have some sort of oil and herb situation on them.
Oh, well, so that's something new for me.
Very classical. Yes. Yes. And of course, other cultures do serve some cold vegetables, but mm-hmm. usually at least pickled, I think.
Okay.
I think the idea of like no preparation ahead of time pretty much comes from the Africa to Europe line.
Okay.
And Americans, I think, often think of herbs as extras in a lot of kitchens.
Yeah.
But in the Roman Empire, a salad was often like these herby vegetables, mm-hmm. not necessarily like a bigger lettuce leaf.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So like, for instance, Virgil described a salad once in his writings, and it was herbs and vinegar and cheese.
He's not wrong.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's what you get, you know, like an heirloom tomato and mm-hmm. burrata salad. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got the basil, the herb with oil. That's exactly what that is. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
And when I read that, it reminded me of like Southern France food, mm-hmm. about like a big hunk of goat cheese and then some other greens on it and then mm-hmm. a light dressing. And it made me hungry. I wanted that.
Oh, sure, sure. Definitely.
And then flavored olive oils are also evidence of like salad type dishes. And there's this wrecked ship at the bottom of the sea that's the Aegean Sea that's 2,400 years old. And they had barrels of oregano flavored olive oil.
They knew what they were doing.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I think so. It sounds
so
good.
Sad that they didn't get to make it to where they were going.
There were probably other jugs of it somewhere.
I hope.
Yeah. Or we could make our own jugs now that we know.
Yeah. I love putting things into olive oil.
Really?
Just fucking so much garlic.
Oh, yeah. That's nice.
Yeah.
Do you keep mainly vegan at home?
I do.
Okay.
Yeah. I'll become a little bit pescatarian when I go out or when I have to go back home to Michigan. In Michigan, when you say that you're vegetarian or vegan, they're like, so you eat chicken.
Right.
Yeah. So, you know, right. Certain things that I'll occasionally have, cheese occasionally, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That is, I understand why it's obnoxious when people say I could never be a vegetarian, mm-hmm. or things like that. Cause it's like, yes, you could. And people do all the time.
Yeah.
I could be a vegetarian without even noticing. I would not care to be a vegan. And every time I look in my fridge, I'm like, you've got to chill out on the dairy.
Oh, my God. Dairy does not like me.
Ah, well, that makes it easier to avoid it.
No.
No?
Why would it? Why would that make it easier?
It's going to make you sick. Aren't you like, no, thank you?
No. I'm one of those people where, like, there's no reason why I should be around with evolution because, you know, like... Yeah, if it makes you sick, that's supposed to be the sign that you stop eating it. But like, I don't. It's a weakness of mine. Like, I eat a lot less than most people. You know, like I'll allow myself to have like dairy like once every 2 months or something like that.
Oh, that's barely any.
It's
for America.
But it's still. Oh my God. I think because I have a little sister in town from Michigan and. We've had to go a lot of places, touristy places, which means that I'm away from my crutches of healthy food.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, like today I had like a veggie burger that had cheese on it or something like that. And
right.
The other day I had a piece of pizza and I was just like, my body's like, that's fucked up. And I'm still doing it, you know?
Well, it's so true that we're all our own worst enemies, you know?
Yeah.
Let's talk about a story that could well be apocryphal, but there's a Spanish word that I don't know how to pronounce, and I don't even know if it's still in use, but it's like aceteria. It's spelled A-C-E-T-E-R-I-A.
Okay.
And it means vegetables dressed but not pickled with vinegar.
Oh.
So that's another strong indication that the ideas of salads came from all around the Mediterranean, because in the olden days, I'm about to tell a story about Catherine of Aragon. So in the early obviously,
it's a show about salads. We're yeah. definitely going to get into Catherine of Aragon. Okay.
by the 1400 and before that, and for a couple of years afterwards, like the area that's now Morocco and the area that's now Spain were basically interchangeable.
Okay.
Like same people, same culture. Catherine was brought up when she was still very young to England, mm-hmm. to marry the guy who would briefly be King Arthur and then marry his brother who became King Henry VIII.
Mm-hmm.
And so she had to have a whole entourage of servants with her. And it is said, whether this is truthful or not, I don't actually know, but it is said that when they introduced Spanish cooking to the English court, that cases of gout went down because the Spanish people were like, could we eat a vegetable?
Yeah, I would believe it.
Yeah. So she was the one who brought vegetables to the aristocracy in England. But it took at least another 200 years in England for the common folk to apparently get the picture. And the reason that that is thought is because in 1699, the first English book about salads was published.
Mm-hmm.
And it was called, well, it was spelled differently than the Spanish word slightly, but... It was called like Aceteria or something.
Mm-hmm.
A Discourse of Salads, spelled S-A-L-L-E-T-S.
Oh.
Yes. And it was written by a guy with a mission. It wasn't just a recipe book. It wasn't just a how-to book. It was an explanation and a defense of eating raw vegetables. So
I like that, a defense.
Yes, yes.
It's like me talking to my family when I go home.
It's exactly that, because he had to justify it because he knew he had a hostile audience among English common folk. So it talked about how you should pick leaves right from your garden, and that when you wash them, you shouldn't drown them in the water. You just sort of like sprinkle some water on them. And then to dry the leaves, you swing them in a clean napkin. Which is the origin of the salad spinner.
That's
right.
That's a fucking salad spinner. That's a medieval salad spinner.
Old school. And that you should try and get an olive oil in a pale green color. And that you should infuse your vinegar with herbs and edible flowers and also sea salt. The finest crystals, he specified. And then he had instructions for 35 different kinds of greens. So back then, they had available a lot of lettuces that for a lot of American history, people were ignoring. Four varieties of romaine. Nasturtium, spinach, sorrel, endive, chicory, celery, fennel, radish, arugula. So this is what he was trying to tell people to eat. And they did for a little while. It went out of fashion. And now it's recently back again. We'll talk about that in a bit. He also had a recipe for salad dressing, which was olive oil, wine vinegar, sea salt, mustard, pepper, and hard-boiled egg yolks.
Yeah, that's a perfect salad dressing.
Right?
It's still perfect.
Yeah, I feel like it's kind of one that's still used.
No, it definitely is.
Yeah.
It definitely is.
So, this all sounds good to us. But like I said, his hostile audience, by the way, his name was John Evelyn. So, he had to prove that it was civilized to eat salad. Because
I mean, that's also hard to prove if you eat one in public.
So true.
Because it's hard to be casual or aristocratic eating a salad.
Yes. I don't remember if I've read this somewhere or what it is, but, you know, ladies are supposed to be dainty. So it's like eat a salad on a date.
Yeah. Open up your mouth as wide as possible and just shove a fork of, you know, unwieldy papery things in your mouth and hope it all stays there.
Yeah, and it won't. At least one time.
No, yeah, you look real sexy doing that. It's not, it's like, yeah. Salads? It's like the opposite of eating a banana in public.
You have no control over anything when you eat a salad. So his argument was basically that like you could tell that there was nutrition in greenery, which was another thing. They thought that it was uncivilized and no nutrition in it. But he's like, no,
fucking idiot.
He's like, no, but animals eat greens. Strong animals.
Someone should tell that to Jordan Peterson.
Oh, yeah.
That guy is like, he's on his fucking only meat diet.
Except for if someone told him, that would mean that someone would have to talk to him.
He might have to, you know, stop losing his fucking brain, though. Like, his brain is Swiss cheese. Can you imagine eating only meat?
Well, that's why people get gout.
Oh, my God.
You gotta mix it up a little.
Someone's gotta tell him to eat a salad.
Yeah. But also, it's no one else's responsibility to care for him.
I know.
Is what I think.
I know.
It was also thought that if you ate raw greens, they would just rot in your stomach. Which I think speaks to how digestion was not properly understood.
No. Yeah, yeah, they're definitely, I mean, what did they think meat was going to do in your stomach? Not rot?
I simply don't know. But I will say this, he didn't like all vegetables. He hated mushrooms. He called them rank and provocative excrescences, and that they needed to be boiled for at least an hour before you ate them to, quote, exhaust the malignity.
I mean, is it just because he's worried about people getting sick from the poison that could potentially be in some types?
I mean, maybe he was and he didn't want to say they're poisonous because he's there trying to convince people to eat vegetables. You can't drop poison.
Yeah, the last thing is like, oh, also they might be poisoned. Bye. Love you.
Yes. So he just like called them excrescences, which is the rudest thing you could call something.
Yeah, it's like a piece of shit.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. But I think that you will like this. So he actually was a early and rare in the Western world vegetarian. And he said that vegetarians were more acute, subtle, and of deeper penetration than people who ate meat.
I'm definitely of deeper penetration.
I've always said so.
Yeah. I mean, it's an interesting thing. It is like, in some ways, like if you go very vegetarian or vegan and you really pay attention to the things that you're eating, the ingredients of it, you do become kind of meditative.
Really?
About it. I just think more about the food that is in front of me. And it is food that often takes longer to cook.
Okay.
And it takes more work.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes it's just not easily accessible, or you need many more ingredients than you might need for just, I don't know, fucking grilling a steak.
Yeah.
Or grilling a chicken or something.
Yeah.
But when you're making vegetarian food or vegan food, you know, I have a pantry of things that most people would never use to cook with. You
like
know?
What?
Like for me, I need to always have raw cashews on hand because a lot of the sauces and things that I make are based on soaked cashews.
Oh, okay.
I always have to have sunflower seeds as well, because if I'm making any kind of savory crumble or something, you know, like a Parmesan or something, that is a sunflower seed based, thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I don't want to say substitutes, but are they things that are, sort of similar in texture and umami to cheese?
Yeah, in a sense, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they are. You know, so your nut cabinet grows exponentially when you're a vegan. And, you know, that's fine with me, but you just have many more ingredients, you know.
That's so interesting. I try to eat low carb. I also have a hard time eating meat every day.
Mm-hmm.
So I buy walnuts, those big bags of walnuts from Trader Joe's like every week. It's crazy. I never would have thought myself as someone who like eats a lot of nuts, and I like them, but it's not even a like, oh, it's my favorite food, I can't get enough. It's just like, well, this is how I'm going to get protein.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like I always think in terms of, you know, I like to have a handful of ingredients that are good for making a couple different kinds of veggie burgers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like,
do you make them from scratch?
Yeah.
Oh, fancy.
Yeah. Because you can make them in a giant batch.
Okay.
And if you want, you can always freeze them. And so I tend to make food, my husband and I, we tend to make food in large batches. And,
okay.
And because if you're going to make vegan food, it is many ingredients and it's a little bit time consuming. So you want to make that last as long as possible.
That makes good sense.
Yeah. But, you know, like a really good kind of beet-based burger is wonderful. So I try to have beets in the house. Liquid smoke is kind of necessary. For some burgers, but lentils are always in the house.
Uh-huh.
Brown rice.
And if you call it like burgers, then you're not saying lentil loaf.
Yeah.
And you're not having like 70s hippie associations with your food.
I make like a really mean kind of lentil shepherd's pie.
Oh, really?
That is just, yeah, it's fucking good. It's taken me a long time, but it's vegan and gluten free.
What's the topping?
There's a mashed potato topping. But it is, I have to look up my recipe.
Is it like
recipe
with an oil instead of butter for the mashed potato?
Yeah, there's also the fake butter that I use, Mykonos.
Oh, I don't know the fake butters.
I'm going to show it to you.
Okay.
Mykonos or Mykonos, maybe your listeners know how to pronounce it, but it's a salted butter that is fucking amazing, and it's a vegan butter, but they also make like a pub cheese, like a cashew based pub
that's
cheese
funny.
And some things, but the butter, a vegan baker friend of mine, she turned me onto it, and it's fucking great. It browns, you know, and you can just get some really great flavors out of it.
Nice. That sounds good.
Mm-hmm.
So earlier you mentioned like in the late 90s people getting more into salads. I think you mentioned something along these lines. Like it's gotten a little easier to...
It got popular.
Right. Yes. And it has. That's not just anecdotal. There are trend forecasting and marketing companies that study this sort of thing.
Okay.
So even in the last few years, Americans buy the packaged salads twice as much as they did like 5 years ago.
Oh.
Yeah. And for the past 5 years, probably more like 10 years, because I think this information is a little bit out of date. So for the last 10-ish years, sales of bagged lettuces have increased 6.5% every year. And whole lettuce heads that you put in a bag yourself at the grocery store, those sales are staying flat. So people are buying more bags, pre-bagged lettuce mixes, which means a couple things and doesn't mean some things. So buying them doesn't necessarily mean they're eating them.
Sure. Yeah.
But people
food waste is insane in America.
Yeah. It is. And one thing I will say, food waste is disgusting and we need to be so much more careful. But when I buy the packaged weeds, basically, because I'm normally buying arugula, they go bad so quickly.
Yeah. Well, they're mishandled. I used to work in at a co-op, a grocery co-op in Portland. And there was a lot of care that went into handling the vegetables. And I don't think that people understand how easily greens specifically can bruise. And, you know, other fruits as well. Fruits and vegetables are easily bruised. Like a banana, you shouldn't even touch a fucking banana. Like, don't touch the bananas. The second you touch them, they're fucking bruised and and they're going to go rotten. But when you go to Trader Joe's, for instance, or Vons or whatever your grocery store is, you know, they're trying to overstock the greens that are packaged. And so they're pushing them back.
Right.
So when you push them back, what you're doing is adding pressure to them. And any amount of pressure, and usually it's going to be the center of the bag that gets that pressure and it bruises and then it immediately kind of liquefies.
Yeah.
And then that rots everything around it. And so it rots faster. So it's the mishandling of the produce and that's also fast grocery stuff too. I mean, like, if you look at the Trader Joe's fucking lettuce section, the packaged lettuce section, the greens, it's insane how much they have to keep in stock all the time.
Yeah, very true.
I don't know how many they go through. I know that, like, I'm obsessed with the Crunchiferous mix that they have. We go through like three bags of the Crunchiferous mix in our house a week.
That is so healthy.
It's we put on everything where it's just like, it's like salt to me at this point. We're like, put a handful of this in there.
Yeah. So. Which I actually think is an overall good tip. You can eat so many more vegetables than you think you do if you just throw a handful of weeds, because that's essentially what salad mixes are. Just throw weeds on everything. It barely changes the flavor and you're accidentally eating greenery.
And you get, I mean, like, at least with the mixed stuff that I use, there's some nice crunch to it.
Also that.
You know. Yeah, I love the kind of peppery taste of some of the weeds. And
I sometimes have a hard time with that. I like arugula, but very occasionally I get an arugula that I'm like, okay, calm down.
Oh,
that
my
was
God.
Too much.
The I wished that every pizza came with the option of having a shit ton of just fresh arugula on top of it.
That would probably make a lot of pizzas taste more interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. So that's all kind of the bad stuff, but the good stuff is that people are eating these lettuces that, I mean, it used to just be romaine and iceberg. And now the mixes in the bags have a lot of, like, Mizuna, like a lot of greens, like, and dark red greens. So where they're really mixing it up. So if you are buying the bag lettuces that you purchase, you are getting exposure to more vegetables, which means more vitamins.
Yeah.
Which is cool. It's a chill thing.
Something you can just tell yourself you're doing something good. Mm-hmm. The world is falling around. At least you put a little bit of a handful of greens on whatever you were eating that day.
Yeah, exactly. But we are increasing a little bit of our consumption of the more boring lettuces. Although I say that as someone who's born in 1982, and this stat says that since 1985, American consumption of leaf and romaine lettuces has tripled. So that's an interesting stat for all of American history. For my lifetime, it's just something that I wouldn't have noticed.
Yeah. Why would you notice it?
Yeah. Just like it grew up with me. And so they have done some studies about like whether bag lettuces will make you sick. And apparently they won't make you any more sick than non-bag lettuces. So
there you go.
Whee!
Yay. I mean, we'll figure out and then there's a new study in 20 years, but whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Or they've been paid not to study it or what have you. But for a long time, it was thought in America that meat could make you sick, but we're sort of joining the rest of the world in that vegetables can make you really sick.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Yeah. It's really, I don't know. I worked on a farm for a little bit in Idaho, and during the season that I was working there, we were pulling up radishes and kale and arugula, and I can't remember what else we were doing, but it was just like the responsibility of making sure that you wash things correctly before you take it to market was like, you know,
terrifying.
People can get sick.
Yeah. April, you've had a lot of jobs.
Yeah, I've had a lot of jobs.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I think that's cool because I think maybe from the outside looking in, Hollywood type stuff looks like something that you have to know that you wanted to do your entire life. And maybe you knew that you wanted to do it, but you had a winding path.
I always wanted to make movies and things, but I didn't. Well, first off, I didn't think that women were allowed to do it when I was a kid.
Really?
And I didn't know. It took me until I was really in my 20s to be like, oh, I could actually do this. And
oh my gosh.
And I still feel that way. I still don't feel like I don't know. Younger people are having an easier time of it, but like it's taken me longer to get into this industry because there's still a little voice in my head that's just like, no, only certain people are allowed to do it. Like rich white men are allowed to do that. That's not you. Like you came from nothing. Like why would you be able to do this?
Oh man.
So, So I'm one of those people who really did but didn't know. And mm-hmm. I've actually worked around food more often than not in my life. And my family is usually happier with me when I'm working with food and alcohol because it's things that they understand.
Ah, yes.
You know, my family owns a bar, a dive bar, and, you know, every person in my family has waited tables and bartended and, you know, that's just our life is, you know, knowing how to serve.
Yeah. Well, I will say that I, as someone who like doesn't have kids and won't, so it doesn't matter what my opinion is, but I think that every high schooler should work at least 6 months in retail and at least 6 months in food service.
Oh, yeah. I mean, dude, I wish that I had worked in retail instead of food service because I have worked in both and food service is 10 times harder than retail. And
really?
Yeah.
I'm trying to think about that.
Retail is like a total breath of fresh air after working of this under the stress of I worked like Bar Rush at a Steak and Shake.
Yeah.
And I worked at TGI Fridays at a really busy, busy spot.
Yeah.
And the pressure that is on for those jobs is like everything compared to just like folding a fucking shirt.
Yeah.
Like, oh no, people like there's people at the register. Like that's nothing. Like,
no, I think I do agree with you because I was forgetting some of my retail jobs and the only one I could think of was when I worked at Williams Sonoma in Santa Barbara. Mm-hmm. So the general level of customer snootiness made it hard.
Yeah.
But you're right. Generally speaking, I mean, probably because people are hangry half the time they come into a restaurant. I had money thrown at me in a restaurant. Like, thrown in my face.
I've thrown money at people. But just my boss.
That's different.
Because I hated her.
That's totally different. You weren't throwing it at an employee because you were angry that something cost too much, as if the 18-year-old girl at the cash register said the prices.
No, that's not at all why I did. No.
Right. That was my experience, but that's not why you throw money at people.
No, just because I had to tip out to a person who didn't help me at all.
That sucks. And I didn't know until way too late about the whole tipping out thing. I just accepted whatever it was. And I was like, wait a minute, a general manager with full benefits is getting a portion of the tips?
It's true.
I hate it. I hate it so much. Anyway. We've talked a lot about greens-based salads. Let's talk about the other kind of salad. Do you know what I'm talking about?
I mean, potato salad?
You wish.
I don't know. What other salads are there? What are we... Hot salad?
Okay.
Is there a hot salad?
No, that's something different. Actually, when I was researching this, it seemed like the only hot dish that is considered salad is German potato salad because it has the word salad in it, but it's supposed to be served warm.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wait, it's supposed to be served warm? That's fucking dumb. I've never had German potato salad served warm.
I have. It's really good. Yeah, it is amazing. Okay, so let me tell you a little story that I might have told on this podcast before. I don't remember, but it's that my mom and stepdad moved to Park City a few years ago, but more than a few years ago at this point, but when I was in my 20s. And Park City is in Utah, but it doesn't share the general culture of the rest of Utah.
Yeah.
So a lot of people who live there who grew up Mormon are not practicing Mormons anymore.
Oh, yeah. They're Jack Mormons.
Yes. And some of them are more casual about it, but some of them didn't leave strict Mormonism until like their mid-20s and mm-hmm. are still sort of dealing with the outside world with new eyes. So my mom was in her tennis team, and there was a woman on it who had moved out of a really conservative Mormon community in her 20s to Park City, and she was on the tennis team, and she was invited to join a monthly potluck, and she signed up and said, I'll bring the salad.
Oh no.
And she brought the salad, and then she brought it the second month, and then she was asked to please not bring the salad anymore, bring something different, and she didn't understand what she had done. And she asked someone, and they kindly explained to her that for a lot of people, salad means greens. It doesn't mean Jell-O.
Oh,
so she
no.
had been bringing Jell-O to the potluck club and not knowing that there was a difference between definitions of salad.
Oh, no. That just, like, I knew something was coming, and it made me feel so, like, embarrassed already.
Right. Which I sort of think is how she felt about it, but she also told the story, mm-hmm. and I'm glad she told the story because for my selfish purposes, that was like educational for me and the type of work that I'm interested in.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know that some people think of salads as something totally different than what I think of
yeah.
as a salad.
We didn't grow up with Jell-O. Because we own a bar, we made a lot of Jell-O shots. So Jell-O was alcohol. It wasn't salad for us.
Okay, that's interesting.
My grandma has a recipe for Jell-O shots that I included in Max Fun cookbook because we all learned how to make the Jell-O shots. My grandmother just had fucking surgery and she was like, you'll be so proud of me. I still went home and made all the Jell-O shots. And I'm just like,
oh my gosh.
Yeah, so Jell-O is not a salad for us. It is like a lot of vodka in it.
Well, that's interesting because I think a lot of people think of Jell-O salad as being a Midwestern thing. But in your particular experience, it's a get drunk thing.
Yeah, in my particular experience, that doesn't make any sense. I think I had gone to some people's house and mm-hmm. just been like, why are you doing this? Is this alcoholic?
Excuse me, there's no booze in my serving.
Yeah.
There's been a mistake.
Yeah.
What is your grandmother's Jell-O shot recipe?
It's super simple. What she does, honestly, is she doubles the amount of vodka that you're supposed to have in it.
There it is.
Because it's just not enough.
Right. Does she charge double?
No. She just wants people to have a good time.
Aww.
She's just like, why would they want it if it wasn't a good value?
Oh, that's sweet. That's nice.
Yeah.
Okay, so there was a, you know, the polling site 538?
Yeah.
Nate Silver. Mm-hmm. There's a poll that was done in late 2015, and people still talk about it, particularly around this time of year. It always comes back up on Twitter, and people yeah. freak the fuck out about it. It is about the most common Thanksgiving side dishes.
Yeah.
Have you seen this?
Yes.
And have you seen that from the mountain states west, it is said in this poll that the most common side dish is salad?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I saw that today.
What are your feelings about this?
It makes fucking sense.
Really? Tell me more.
I mean, salad is what I bring every single year to Thanksgiving. There is so much heavy shit on Thanksgiving that when you offer something to someone that might help their bowels move, mm-hmm. like, mm-hmm. and it's not going to take up that much space. It's not like having bread at, like, getting too many rolls at the buffet and it takes up too much room. Like, salad is not going to take up much room in your stomach. What it's going to do is help make room in your stomach. It's going to help break things down. It's good roughage. You know, it's going to help move that shit out, literally.
May I respectfully suggest that a lot of people don't think of it that way because
they're wrong?
Yeah. Sure. Fair. They yeah. can totally be wrong. But all anecdotally, having talked to people about this, they feel like salad is not what they want out of Thanksgiving because people specifically want to pig out on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, but that's acting like salads can't be fucking good. You know? Like, why do you got to pick one or the other? Why does it have to be like a fucking like education? Like, why does it have to be like going to school? Why can't it just be like fun school?
Interesting.
For your stomach.
Interesting. You know? You are an outlier. This is all anecdotal because it's only from people I've talked to.
I'm not an outlier. I've seen that. I've seen the poll. Clearly, I'm not an out. It's almost like when Trump won and people started lying about like the poll stuff.
Oh, that's hilarious.
If you ask them in person, that they're going to be like, no, I would never bring salad. But if you like, they're like secretly like, I definitely bring salad.
Okay.
It's a side dish.
Okay.
Yeah.
I like this point of view because I was thinking that maybe because of the way that the terms were defined, that a lot of people were talking about Jell-O salad. Because to my earlier point, a lot of people don't see the difference between a leaf-based salad and a Jell-O salad, or when they hear salad, they think of Jell-O salad.
You think they're all bringing Jell-O salad?
I have been surprised and sometimes delighted and sometimes not by how common Jell-O-based dishes are. And how people who have moved from other parts of the country still continue to consider them a special occasion treat. They might not earnestly think that they're something special, mm-hmm. but it's more of the nostalgia factor.
Yeah, I mean, like, lots of shitty green bean casseroles out there.
Right, exactly. So I actually tweeted at the author of that poll. His name is Walt Hickey, and the exciting news is that he's actually updating it this year, mm-hmm. and I think it'll come out on the same day that this episode drops, so we can see. He didn't specify to me about how it's changing, but he's updating it for 2018. And I asked him if he, because there were, it was a multiple choice thing, mm-hmm. and there were other options like peas, carrots, Brussels sprouts. And I asked him if he had put those vegetables in the salad category when adding things up, and he said no. So it's either or both of our theories. People are liars, mm-hmm. or because another part was that there was vegetable salads and then there was fruit salads, but then in the map, it was categorized only as salads.
I have honestly only been to like one dinner where someone ever brought a fruit salad.
Yeah, I don't think they're common either. But I will say that I once brought a green salad to something that was billed as a harvest feast, and it was in the autumn, and no one touched my salad.
They don't know what's good for them.
I mean, but you wouldn't have liked my salad either. It had apples in it.
Sometimes I can hang with apples. It depends on what kind of spices you got in that dressing.
All right.
Like if it's like a Dijon-based dressing, sometimes I can handle that. But just no fucking like candied nuts or some shit.
What about not candied nuts? I like toasting them plain with rosemary. Walnuts toasted plain with rosemary.
No, that's good. That's okay. Good. Sometimes walnuts are still a little bit too bitter for me. Like definitely some almonds.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to fuck with some almonds.
Mm-hmm.
Toasted with some oil and some salt and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I think that tastes really good.
The one fruit I'll make an exception for is sometimes a really thinly sliced strawberry in a summer salad.
Okay, that's good too, yeah.
That's the only fruit really that I'll...
Persimmons are becoming a lot more popular.
Oh, I fucking love persimmons, but I don't know if I would have them in a salad. I mean, they are starchy in a way, mm-hmm. that like a squash or something is. So.
Totally. Yeah. I don't know. A lot of people are doing it.
Fine. All right. It's like putting like a pumpkin pie on top of a salad or something. You know.
That's exactly right. It is. Yeah. But it is one of those fruits that can be used sweet or savory.
Yeah. Versatile.
Yeah, exactly. So there's also so many like social implications around the Jell-O salad, the salad mold, the gelatin mold. Because gelatin molds have been around for a very long time in aristocratic Europe. But the thing about real gelatin, not powdered, is that it's incredibly hard to make. It's a little bit difficult to work with, and it smells pretty literally of death. Definitely of barns and feces.
Oh.
Because it's made from hooves and whatnot.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Yeah. That is the thing.
That's the thing where you're like, this is definitely like medieval. They're like, let's cook down some hooves.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's gnarly. And it's like a real, oh God, we don't have anything else. Let's figure out how to eat those. And it just means boiling them and boiling them and boiling them. And, you know, part of the reason the aristocrats ate it is because they weren't involved in the actual cooking of their food. They could have the servants be the one who smelled dead animal all day.
Yeah.
And there's also a dish that's called a salad. It's called salmagundi. And it's been around since at least the 1700s. You're nodding. You're familiar.
I've heard and seen this word. So
it seems like it was very popular amongst seafaring people, and it was a salad that was composed of chopped meat, anchovies, eggs, and onions with oil and herbs. It's actually funny because it's sort of transformed into a different seafood dish in Jamaica, but you can see like the origins of it because there's always been seafood in it.
Yeah.
So those points just to say that we think of Jell-O salad molds being like a particularly mid-century thing, but they've actually existed for a lot longer than there. It just became accessible in the 20th century.
Okay.
When Jell-O was like, ooh, let's powder this.
Yeah. No, fucking smart people.
Yeah.
Let's make it colorful.
Yeah, exactly. So there's a book by a woman named Laura Shapiro, and it is called Perfection Salad, Women and Cooking at the Turn of the Century. And for people who listen to this podcast, I think you'll find it fascinating because I just wanted to just read the book for this episode, essentially. Mm-hmm. I had heard the term perfection salad before, but I didn't know what it meant. Have you ever heard of this before?
Never.
So I think I knew that it was a Jell-O salad, but the reasons why it's called perfection salad are so mishmashed and interesting and so American mm-hmm. in all of its different elements. So if you have like a salad in a bowl, what you have to understand about that is disorganized. Mm-hmm. There's no order to it, which is very frustrating to a 1915 housewife who wants to show that even though she doesn't have five servants, she's still running an elegant home. Okay. And if you just throw down a bowl of vegetables, that's chaos.
Yeah.
It's unmanageable. So if you put it in a gelatin mold, it's organized. Everything is in its little rectangular shape.
I feel like I'm learning things I don't want to know.
That's when you learn about food.
Podcast.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's basically the Bummercast.
It's like I didn't want to know that a lot of people think that Jell-O is salad, and I don't want to carry that in my heart.
It's how you understand the culture. Yeah, so perfection salad was actually created for Knox gelatin. They had a recipe contest, mm-hmm. and this woman in 1905, she developed it, and it has sliced vegetables in it.
Okay.
And it was called perfection salad because it was a very organized presentation of a green salad. A couple of things. Jell-O in particular used the word pure over and over and over again in their marketing materials.
Pure.
Mm-hmm. Cleanliness was an obsession of early 1900s Americans because it was a reaction to how dirty everything got in the industrial era. And when Upton Sinclair's The Jungle was published, people really freaked out. And as a reaction, food mm-hmm. companies started pushing their processed food product.
Yeah.
And calling it clean.
Yeah.
And Americans really responded really strongly.
Yeah, it's so that. Funny that Upton Sinclair was trying to prevent that, and it just went further and further away into like, mm-hmm. you don't know what's in your food.
Mm-hmm. No good deed goes unpunished.
Oh, love that guy. Love that guy. He was into psychics too.
Was he really?
Yeah, he wrote one of my favorite books called Mental Radio about his wife and him doing ESP practicing like they're in their later life. Oh, I love it. It's so good. It's a hard book to find, but
what a character he was.
Yeah, and he also exposed this meatpacking industry problem in Chicago. Yeah, very interesting.
Oh, I had no idea about that part of his work. Okay, so before powdered gelatin came onto the scene,
mm-hmm.
if you look at like recipe books and etiquette books and that sort of thing in the late 1800s, they were still written for the woman who has servants. And of course, the servants would do all the cooking.
Mm-hmm.
Except a lot of these books would say, but when you make a salad, you, the hostess, the lady of the house, prepares the salad herself.
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah, it is weird. And they said in these books, because you have to have nimble hands, nimble ladylike hands, thin fingers. To do it.
Counts me out.
Yeah. I think that it was actually a racism and classism issue because the salads were the one uncooked thing and they didn't want dirty servant hands on their uncooked food.
I would say probably. Yeah.
Yeah. Because hygiene in America is a class issue.
Yes.
People who are obsessed with hygiene, not always, but are often very classist. And that doesn't mean rich.
Yeah.
That means classist, which is a different thing in America.
Yeah.
So one way of getting around this issue and not making your own salads was to have the servants put them into a Jell-O mold. Yeah. I'm so sorry to bum you out.
Oh, my God.
But that's America for you, baby.
Like, classism responsible for fucking Jell-O. I knew it.
Well, it's funny because it works out that, like, the Jell-O salad, the gelatin mold becomes the sort of thing that they have at, like, country clubs and basically middle-class institutions striving to be upper-class.
Yeah.
That's where you find these gelatin molds. And that's exactly the type of person who would be concerned about seeming like she has someone else to do the cooking for her and seeming like she's very hygienic and everything in her house is pure. Mm-hmm. That sort of thing.
Yeah.
So it's a Jell-O, man. It's a class issue. Also, it's the state snack of Utah. They have a state snack. And it's Jell-O.
I think it needs to be outlawed.
Jell-O or Utah?
Poor Utah. Poor Utah.
It has some cool things. They have something called Pioneer Day, which is a bigger deal than the 4th of July because Mormon expansion is a bigger deal to them than the United States of America.
Yeah.
It's their personal manifest destiny.
Yeah.
And it's on something like June 18th and the fireworks displays are amazing. It's called Pioneer Day. The non-Mormons in Utah celebrate on that same day Pie and Beer Day.
Pie in their like 3.5%.
They bring in the good stuff.
It's not like the Catholics doing any better. We like all of our priests are alcoholics.
Yeah. So. To be clear, we're not hating just on Mormons. There's just a lot that's ridiculous about organized religion.
Yeah.
Generally speaking.
In a general way.
Yeah.
We've all got our hangups. It's just that Mormons tend to have them actually around food quite a bit.
Okay. So this is, and I feel like I've probably talked about this before, but Salt Lake Magazine did 50 iconic foods of Utah or something like that. And number one was Jell-O. And the writer of the piece said, well, in the church, you're not supposed to enjoy anything too much.
Yeah.
So Jell-O becomes our go-to dessert because it's not that good.
That absolutely makes sense.
I thought so too.
Like every party, like that any of my Mormon friends through that I came to, like, first off, like, hey, we know it's going to be a sober party and
right.
It's fun, but there's always so many activities. Like, they come prepared with so many activities of, like,
yes.
I'm going to keep you busy. We're going to do this thing. We're going to do an Easter egg hunt. We're going to decorate gingerbread houses. We're going to do shit. And I'm like, okay. But then the food is, like, good enough, you know?
Yeah.
It's, like, good enough.
Interesting.
And, you know, definitely no sweets. There might be some like apple cider, but
okay.
There's no soda or anything, you know, like mm-hmm. it was like, yeah, I mean, like that's saved for weddings, you know?
Well, I will say this, Mormons as a people are incredibly good looking. So there is something to it.
That's the thing. Like they're fit.
Yeah.
They're, and that's like the Mormons that I knew in Idaho, like. All avid hikers
yeah.
would be the ones who would yeah. always show me like the best hiking
spots. And that is part of their healthy living doctrine from their religion, but it works for them.
And honestly, you know, I think all of that in moderation is great. And I think it would be great if other organized religions would actually adopt any kind of idea around health and body and this idea of a sacred temple. And
yeah, you
know, just
sometimes it leads to a lot of plastic surgery. But when it's just about being right. healthful and active, it's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they are just it's funny because they inspire so much lust in my heart. My filthy Catholic heart.
Mm.
And there's nothing to be done about it.
Yeah, Catholics and their fucking fish fries. We are notorious for terrible food, so. Unless you're lucky enough to be Italian Catholic, so.
Yeah, they're the only ones who have it figured out.
Yeah.
Really. That's why Irish Catholics like to marry Italian Catholics so that we can eat some of their food.
Yeah, it's great.
Mm-hmm.
Well, also like Mexican Catholics, like.
Basically, don't be Irish Catholic.
Yeah, basically don't be Irish Catholic.
There. And thus is the lesson.
Yeah.
Irish. Oh, man. Well, we definitely veered into religion, but I think that's often the sign of a good podcast about food.
It's often the sign that you're talking to me on a podcast.
Do you go there a lot? Do you like to see? You got so upset about having to know about the origins of Jell-O, but you're someone who knows about the origins of religion. That's, some would say, more horrifying.
Actually, it's all horrifying. Everything is horrifying. Yeah.
Well, thank you for coming on this journey with me.
Thank you for teaching me all of this weird shit.
Always my pleasure. April, where can people find you on social media?
I'm mostly on Twitter, and you can find me at A Wolffull. So that's AWOLFEFUL. Like, I'm full of wolves.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm there a lot too much because that's what I have to do to make a living. Mm-hmm.
Start shit and get attention for it. Yeah, exactly. That's the journalism model.
And that's definitely going to work long term. So.
Yeah, for sure. Awesome. Well, April, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.